Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show.
What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. Today, I'm joined with our co-host, Coach Nick. Nick, how are you doing today?
I'm very, very well. Thank you, Coach Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Right now, as of recording this, I just competed in my powerlifting meet yesterday. So I'm in recovery mode right now. You know, my body's a little bit sore. I didn't sleep too well last night. You know, my back's a little bit tender, but it was a good event. It was a fun event. And, you know, moving on to the next one, like we always do in the fitness space, as we do in the challenge world, as we do in bodybuilding, like, you know, Nick, you know, once we complete that goal, it's all about working towards that next one.
Congratulations. Well, I'm going to obviously quiz you occasionally throughout the podcast about what happened and how you went, because everyone wants to know. So if I didn't, then I wouldn't be doing my job.
Yes, we'll chat about it shortly. It'll be lots of fun. But look, yeah. Nick, we are in week 8 of the challenge, this January challenge. And week 8 is important because we've got our week 8 check-in. So week 8 check-in opens up this Friday at 9 a.m. So Friday, the 25th of March. So if you want to be eligible for the week 8 check-in prize, you just need to check in anytime from Friday 9 a.m. until Sunday midnight. If you don't make that time, that's cool, no stress. You just miss out on the week 8 random prize selection, and then you have actually up until the very end of the challenge to complete that week 8 check-in. Now you do need to complete that week 8 check-in to have access to the week 9 to 12 training templates, and it's the very same process to the week 4 check-ins. So you just need to upload a progress photo of yourself. No completion document, no newspaper, no requirements around that. It just needs to be a progress photo of yourself. And similar to the advice we suggested at week 4, I will recommend that you take a similar photo to maybe the start photo, the week 4 photo, and then what you expect the final photo to be like, as in maybe it's a plain white background, maybe you're outside, maybe you're in your living room, wherever it is, wearing similar attire so that you can actually start to compare some of these photos. And it's a really nice time to compare photos from, let's say, month to month, like every 4 weeks. Sometimes comparing, you know, day to day or week to week photos can be a little bit challenging to really see any significant changes. And especially when those changes are very environmental, you know, different lighting, different attire, different, you know, space where you're taking that photo, heck, even the different time of day, it can, you know, add extra variables to those photos, and it can be really hard to tell the difference.
It's good to definitely take those photos. Some people are asking if they can take them now. You can take them, you just can't upload them till Friday, but go for it.
That's right, absolutely. Now, Nick, at this time of the challenge, you know, it is that exciting time because, you know, as we move into the week 9 to 12, that's when we see challengers start using words like, the magic happens in weeks 9 to 12. And, you know, if we're being really honest, there is no like magic. There's no magic in our strategy in the challenge, or, you know, within fitness or dieting or anything like that. No magic is occurring. We hope that by this part of the challenge, or if you've done multiple challenges with us, you understand that's a bit of a strategy. You know, it's about energy balance. It's about, you know, stimulating muscle growth, and, you know, some key principles into making change in our body, and a really structured change. Like, we don't really want to be approaching our fitness goals with just throwing everything at the wall and hoping something sticks. We want to have like a strategy, apply that strategy, measure if the strategy is working. Is it working? Great. Keep doing what you're doing. Is it not? Okay. Go back to the drawing board, maybe tweak a few things, and then try again. So at this time of the challenge, it's a great time to reflect on, you know, your starting goal. So when you started the challenge, you know, you may have started by wanting to lose some body weight. Maybe you wanted to build some muscle. Maybe you want to just improve your fitness. Or maybe you genuinely wanted it at all. You wanted to be able to squat and deadlift your body weight, have a six pack, and be able to run a marathon and do all the things, which is awesome, great goal. But you know, that might be a very long-term goal to achieve. But at this point in the challenge, it's a great time to start thinking about the future, because fitness is all about moving goalposts, which sucks, but it's part of the game, where once you achieve that first goal, so maybe when you get to the end of the challenge, you've got the six pack, awesome, where to next from there? So what is your next goal from there? And it's okay for that goal to change over time. And a really wise strategy to do is something like maybe a weight loss phase and then a weight gain phase and cycle between the two. So when you're in that weight gain phase, focusing on building muscle, and then when you're in that weight loss phase, you're focusing on fat loss. Really long-term strategy that is adopted by lots of fitness people, you know, Coach Nick and myself included. Or maybe you do want to step away from weightlifting, and maybe you want to start maybe some triathlon training, or maybe you want to get better at rock climbing, or maybe you want to get back into some recreational sport like, you know, footy or football or something like that. So it's a great time now to think about, you know, where to next. And you know, my question now goes to Nick. You know, Nick, you're doing lots of amazing work with your strength training and getting ready for your bodybuilding show. But, you know, what's the like long-term goal here? So, you know, if you kind of picture yourself in like 6, 12, and then maybe 24 months from now, like, have you thought about the future goals for Coach Nick?
Yes, absolutely. Do you know what's so funny? Someone asked me that the other day. They said, what's your lifetime goal? Because they were watching me do my deadlift, because I got 155, which I wasn't expecting.
Just blitz it, classic.
I don't know what happened there. But anyway, so I just had a bit of luck. No, good programming, all that sort of stuff. And then I thought, well, why don't I lifetime goal try for 200? How could I do that? You know, that's my lifetime goal for the rest of my life. Like, I'll be happy if I die and do that. I don't know how. I might die doing it. But yeah, so I always think one step ahead.
Yep.
And
yep.
Nothing's ever good enough.
Yep.
No, so I don't know, you're probably the same, aren't you?
Yeah, it's a little bit like that. And yeah, it sucks because you see, you know, people online, and we say a lot, you know, don't compare yourself to other people, but you do, right? It's part of human nature. And, you know, you might see other individuals and they are just aggressively stronger than you are. And you're like, oh geez, like, you know, I could work towards something like that, or I hope I could. So yeah, like something like a deadlift, like I'd love to get a 300 kilo deadlift one day. And, you know, I've witnessed a few people do it before. And it's like, whew, wow, like, you know, that person isn't too much of a different body shape to who I am. I'm like, okay, maybe if I keep working at it and work on my levers and my leverages and those types of things, you know, maybe that is something on the cards one day. But I'd really love to aim for that, you know, 300 kilo deadlift, maybe 250 kilo squat, and then like a 160 bench would be really cool. Heck, even 180, you know, like four 20 kilo plates on each side would be really, really cool thing to achieve. But, you know, like that's one step at a time. And, you know, that might be the long-term goal. And heck, I might get halfway towards that and be like, oh, maybe I want to have a little break from this and go back to maybe some, you know, running as an example, or maybe some boxing, like I spoke about in a couple of podcasts ago. So it's okay to change, and it's okay to have like a big end goal, right, that you want to work towards.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really important to have a goal that's even, you know, out of reach, nearly, you know, that kind of a thing. Not saying yours is, but I think that's what makes it exciting.
Yeah, yeah. And I do think that, you know, when you think about goals, especially some goals that seem really lucrative, such as I want to compete in a powerlifting show, a meet, or if I want to compete in a bodybuilding show, which is pretty common for challengers to transition to that. Sometimes when, you know, we really build up this idea, like, oh, I'm going to go and compete in a bodybuilding show, and we make it out as if it's going to be like a big 5-year long commitment. And I would say that many individuals that complete the challenge, you know, get really ripped. Like, they are dice. They are competition worthy to step up on stage. And like, part of being a bodybuilder or being a powerlifter or being just an athlete is about the competition. It's not about like the end goal where, you know, you need to hide for years at a time and then enter your competition and somehow like demolish the competition. It's about going, maybe you learn a few things, you gain that experience, and then you go to the next show and the next show and the next show. So my point that I'm trying to make here is that if you are maybe listening to this and you've been doing a few challenges and you want to, let's say, step up on stage as a bodybuilder, or maybe enter a powerlifting meet, or maybe sign up to do a 10K fun run or a half marathon or full marathon, like, just go do it, right? Just go do it. Cause if you fail, that's cool. It's fine. You know, you learn, you move on, you get better the next time. You might not win that very first time. That's cool. No dramas. You know, it's all about the process and the journey of being that individual as an athlete. And, you know, an example would be me with my powerlifting show. It was only maybe 4 or 6 weeks ago where I said, okay, well, it's time for me to do this. And I signed up and I went and did it. And could I have done it better? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Could I have, you know, prepped for 6 months, 12 months, 2 years for the competition? Yeah, absolutely. I could have. I could have phased it out and did it perfectly. I could have hired multiple coaches and, you know, dabble in all the equipment and the gear and all the things to be the best I could on that day. But I just decided to sign up, give it a go, give a good crack. I ended up coming third in the comp. Awesome. And I've learned the lessons and then now I'm going to do my next one. So basically my point is, in this long-winded way, is just go and do it. You'll be surprised how competitive you are and that you may be building up this really big, scary thing in your head that you need to prepare for a really long time to do it when you might be ready to do it right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the first time I stepped on stage, looking back, I was basically just skinny. You know, like I had heaps of abs and all that, but it's not a diet contest, you know, and that's, I guess, what you realize. And it's like if you don't get your feet wet with it, how are you even going to know, you know? And then it becomes this mystical, mythical thing and you start to build it up in your head, but it's really just like at your local town hall and you chuck a tan on, get a sparkly bikini or whatever, and you just go do it and celebrate it with your family and it's actually really fun.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I think that's the point, right? And you would hate to kind of get 2 years into prepping for like a powerlift, like a bodybuilding show, as an example. You know, you've done the challenge, maybe multiple challenges, and you're really lean, you're really ripped, and then you spend another 2 years preparing for a bodybuilding show. Then you go do it, and then you realize that maybe you didn't enjoy it. Or maybe you're like, oh, this isn't for me, right? And you're like, well, okay, did you spend all that time preparing for it and you just didn't know what it was like? Or could you just started, like you said, Nick, dipped your toes in it. Oh, yeah, I gave it a go. You know, I've got the six pack. I've got the tan on. I've got the little budgie smugglers for the guys or little sparkly bikinis for the girls. Actually, the guys are pretty sparkly too. That's cool as well. And you know, you just kind of giving it a go. And heck, you may even walk away with a medal or you might even win. Awesome. Great. At like a local level. And then, you know, you move up to that next level. Maybe you want to try like a state level or like maybe even dabble in that national level or even just go and watch the show, which is always really cool as well. It's being like, okay, what are the state levels like? What are the national levels like? You know, and you might be really surprised and going, wow, like this is what the national competition is like. Oh, well, yeah, I'm pretty close to this. Like, yeah, okay, I'm going to do it, you know? So yeah, there's always ways that we can kind of like dabble our feet in it. And it's all about dabbling. You got to dab to get in there.
Definitely. And there's never a better time than now. So this is your daily motivation coming from the two of us, you know, get on with it. Just do it.
No, so good, Nick. So good. Now, Nick, last podcast we did last week, we introduced the M challenge, which is the culmination or the amalgamation coming together of both the Max and the Maxine challenge, calling it M challenge, right? Really creative name. Now the idea is that it's very similar to how the challenges run at the moment. You know, you're probably aware that we have one nutrition workbook and that's both for, Max and Maxine challenges. You know, we utilize that workbook, input our own individual information, and it gives us a plan to follow. If you are doing the challenge with your partner and maybe your partner's doing Tone and Shape, you're doing Lean and Ripped, you may find that those two programs look very similar, and that's by design. You know, there's not a big difference between male and female training, right? Maybe, you know, different sizes require different loads. Like, you know, if you had both Nick and I in the gym together, you know, Nick might be able to deadlift more than me, but, you know, I might be able to bench press more than her. So like, that's okay. You know, you just choose the load that you're going to use, but the programs are very similar. And that's the whole idea around the M challenge, is coming together of the two programs. There will be two different, you know, product lines, which is outside of the challenge. So, you know, Max's protein and Maxine's burn. They're different parts of the company that we are. So we don't have much of a say with those products, but they're staying as Max and Maxine products. But then the challenge is coming together. And you know, we're really, really excited because the challenge is coming together when we are launching our new app. So it's called a native app, if anybody's in app development. So everything's going to be run on the app. You've got to do all your check-ins and, you know, access places like the forum and all the content. Everything's going to be on the app on your device. There'll also be like a what's called a web app. So if you don't have a smartphone or a tablet or you don't enjoy the device life, you can still access it via a computer as well. So you'll have all these features in there. And we are hoping to launch it in the very next challenge, which is the May challenge. So we're hoping to launch it in that May challenge. And similar to like I suggested last podcast, there's always challenges technical-wise with launching these types of things. So I'm sure that you out the challenges will understand if there's any small bugs or tweaks that might happen in day one of the new app. And we would love for you to work with us just to help us highlight any problems or bugs or places where the app isn't working correctly. And we will endeavor to get it working as quickly as we can. Well, not me, because I'm not an app developer, but we our team will get it done for you.
Definitely. I think it's such an exciting time for us to be involved in the challenge. This time next year, it's going to just look so different and feel so different, but in such an amazing way. And coming together, all of us, I mean, the community is together anyway. So it's just really, it's going to make us even stronger. So bring it on.
Bring it on. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Now, similar to what we suggest for you, the challenger, in your fitness endeavors about constant improvement, getting better at your nutrition strategy or getting better at the deadlift or the squat or getting better at running or improving your fitness levels, we're always about improvement here. And that's just like what we are with the challenge. So, we're always looking for ways to further improve the challenge. This goes out to you. If you have any ideas on how we can improve the challenge for you, we'd love to hear it. So you can reach out to us via email at challenge@aminoactive.com.au. You can message us on our social media accounts, probably not Nick and my personal social media accounts. We get lots of messages and I sometimes miss some of those messages, so I'm sorry. But you can message Max's challenge or Maxine's challenge on places like Instagram or Facebook. That ends up in the right channels towards us as well. So you can reach out to us in those areas for any ways that we can improve the challenge, make it better for you. And that could be something like if you want more educational videos, maybe you want more podcasts, maybe you want more nutritional content, or maybe you want some more exercise programs or whatever it is. We're always looking for ways to improve the challenge.
That's right. And no idea is a bad idea, because it could just be the thing that we go, wow, we hadn't thought of that, or that's such an innovative way of doing that. So, let us know, because we're here waiting to create stuff.
Yes, always. And finally, I just want to say that there's lots of areas online now where people can come together. Of course, our biggest areas are places like our Facebook social hub and places like Instagram. But there's lots of other platforms which we aren't really on, places like, TikTok or Twitter or Twitch or Discord, maybe YouTube a little bit, or, Reddit. So wherever you spend most of your time, if you want the challenge to move there, let us know. So, if you are someone who spends lots of time on Twitter and you want to see some challenge content on Twitter, yeah, let us know. Something like, TikTok or Instagram Reels. Like, I'm not really one of those like TikTok dancers. I don't really want to be. But if that's where you spend a lot of your time and you find some content really valuable, let us know. And we'll look for ways that we can create some content in those areas so we can reach you, our challenger.
We might have to enlist the help of my teenage daughters to create those for us. it's about my limit as well, but we will get it done.
No, so good. Yes. So good, Nick. Yes. All right, Nick, before we move on to our NSVs, would you like a little bit of a super summary about how the day went yesterday?
I have been waiting. I want to hear everything. I don't even want it to be a super summary. I want it to be an exact blow-by-blow from when you got up all the way through, like within, if you can do it within 3 minutes, but I need to know everything. Like, what did you eat? Everything, just as much as you can.
Well, so my first thing I did in the day was to check my body weight because I needed to be under 105. When I signed up to the event, I was cruising at maybe like 108 in my good old mass bulking phase. And then for the competition, I needed to be under 105 because the weight classes are those 120 plus, 105, under 105, and then 93. So I didn't want to compete in the like 120 class. So I had to be under 105. And then I wasn't able to, lose you know, 10 and 15 kilos in 6 weeks. So I wasn't competing under 93s. So that was my first challenge in the morning, was to make sure I made that weight. And I did. I was cruising at just under 103. I ended up taking a photo, and because I was holding my phone, ended up ticking over to 103. Great, happy days. And then when I did my weigh in, I was at like 102.2 or something like that. So I ended up being like really cleanly made it under 105. So that was the first thing. Had a solid breakfast of some good old protein oats, like my normal breakfast. And then started loading up some caffeine in the morning. I think throughout the day, I ended up drinking a lot of caffeine in terms of like pre-workout, things like energy drinks. I think overnight last night, I really struggled sleeping because of the amount of caffeine that I consumed. And we know that caffeine, really big ergogenic aid. So that was helped me get through the day, because it was a really long day, right? Weigh-in was at like 10 in the morning. Competition started at 12 and we didn't finish until 5:30, 6 o'clock. So it was just a long, long day. So you can imagine that doing those three lifts, we're doing a squat first, then a bench press, then a deadlift. And we've got three attempts at each lift, including like a warm-up for each kind of lift. So, just lots of exercise. So by the time you get to the deadlift, you're just generally tired. You know, you've done max effort on a squat, a bench press, and then now you're going to go deadlifts. So great, happy days. I made my weight class, getting ready to do my squats. Ended up hitting 205 as my max lift on a squat. I missed the 215, which I was a little upset about. That's okay, because I was, the 205 felt real quick, and I thought, I don't know if I go the 215 or maybe the 220, because I always wanted that 220 in a comp. But I thought, okay, 215, be a little bit conservative. I don't want to like overreach so that I'm like gassed for like the bench press and the deadlift. So I went the 215, but lost my balance a little bit as I was coming up and missed it. Unfortunately, that's okay. Happy days, move on. Bench press comes along. I made my first attempt at 130. And I've been really struggling with the competition bench press as opposed to regular bench press, because I've been doing bodybuilding style training for a really long time where, you know, barbell comes to your chest, just touch and go, right? But then in competition, it's, the bar comes to your chest, it comes to a complete stop, then a judge calls, press, and then you press. So that pause feels like an eternity. You know, we're joking in our hand in the back and we're like, oh man, the judges are making us pause for three business days, right? Because when the bar comes to your chest, you know, even if it's like a 1 second pause, geez, that feels like days, you know? And because the barbell comes to a complete stop, it's really difficult to press. So, you know, I have been able to press, 150 kilos in my garage. That was just your old classic bodybuilder bro press, you know, touch the chest and go. But as soon as you add the pause, it's a little bit disabling, you know. So I ended up missing my next two attempts. So I missed the 140 twice. That's okay. So I ended up getting the 130 on the bench press. But then because I missed it that second time, and the third time, it was all the mental game. So building up to the deadlift, it was in my head, being like, crap, you know, I've missed my last two attempts. You know, do I go a bit even more conservative, like start at like 200 kilos on my deadlift, you know, oh shit, you know, that type of thing. And, you know, I've been able to deadlift, 200 kilos for like 8 reps. So I was like, should I start really conservative just because mentally? And that's where the first bit of respect comes from is those strength athletes, everywhere from like local competitions to national competitions, like how they can mentally build themselves up after missing a lift, and then mentally pace themselves, and heck, even just bringing everything onto like one performance, lots of respect. So for me, I ended up deadlifting 210, 220, 230. So that was my final lift, 230. So I ended up going 205, 130, 230 with a total of 565 for the day. So made 6 lifts out of 9 possible lifts. Ended up coming 3rd in my weight class out of 5 people. So I got a place, yay. And then I qualified for the state championships, which was really cool. So it was a fun day. Got super exhausted, very dehydrated. So that was a lesson learned. It was really interesting to see the nutritional choices at the back, where lots of people were choosing the sour gummy worms. That was the food of choice. And the Monster energy drinks was the drink of choice out the back. So
if you partake in all of
It's part of the culture, right? You know, you'd be like a strongman out the back. So everyone's eating their potato chips. right? Those bags of McDonald's and Hungry Jack's there, and sour gummy worms, and yeah, lots of Gatorade and that type of stuff. So it was interesting food choices, lots of like sodium, that's what we're looking for, and lots of easy to digest processed foods. So isn't really helpful for body composition goals, but when you need energy quick and high amounts of energy that would last only, you know, maybe half an hour at most, those are the foods that might be more beneficial. And it made sense when these guys are, you know, picking up 280 kilos or more on a deadlift, and those are the food choices that they're making. Okay, maybe they're onto something. But it was a great day, a very friendly environment, which was really cool comparing it to something like bodybuilding. You know, bodybuilding backstage, it can be very isolating, because often bodybuilders, through their prep, they are kind of doing it themselves, right? They go to the gym, maybe they've got the hoodie on, the headphones on, they're getting the work done, they're, you know, at home doing their meal prep, getting the work done. It can be very, like, you know, isolating, whereas like a power lifter or a strength athlete, you know, I'm talking strongman, Olympic lifters, those types of things, often they're lifting in groups, and you know, that group environment eggs each other on. It's like go, right? So that was the culture at the event. You know, you see someone come on, step on stage, and if the lift looked easy, you know, they get a couple of claps. Yeah, well done. Even if they're like deadlifting, you know, 250 kilos plus. Yeah, well done. But then someone comes on, maybe their first meet ever, and they've got, you know, 180 kilos on the bar for the deadlift, and they're grinding the thing up. The whole crowd goes wild. Woo! Yeah, the judges are going, woo! And then the spotters are like, come on, man. And everyone's like hyping them up, and you watch them grind, they get the lift up, and everyone like goes into a big roar of celebration. And that's what I like the most about the strength sports, is that, you know, it's always celebrating the hard effort. But if you make it look easy, everyone's like, oh yeah, you know, well done. You know, you're off to the next one. So it doesn't really matter what the weight is on the bar that you're squatting or benching or deadlifting. It's about the effort that people really enjoyed on the day. So I really liked that. I really respected that. And I think I'm a little bit hooked, and I might probably be starting my little career of powerlifting, I reckon.
Yeah, I agree. It's a very addictive thing. If I had to have every single thing taken away from me, that would be the one thing that I would, you know, if I had the choice to keep one sport or something, I would do that one, because you can live off that. That's like the best. You don't have to do bodybuilding. It's not, it's kind of cool and everything, but that feeds the soul, I reckon.
It does. You know? I like it.
Did you make any new friends?
Oh yeah. Well, see, you could probably imagine that I like talking to people. So I was out the back chatting with the other athletes, I was chatting with the other coaches, I was chatting with the judges, I was chatting with the spotters. Of course I was, you know, I was making peace offerings with my little sour gummy worms, telling my classic dad jokes. So it was fun. It was great. And yeah, I'm sure I'll see some of those individuals at future competitions.
Oh, awesome. Well, congratulations on behalf of everyone. We're super proud of you, and we can't wait to see what's next with your new endeavor, because you're going to smash it. And well done for getting out there and being in the arena. That's what we like to be as coaches. We need to be in the arena. So well done.
No, thank you, Nick. Thank you. Appreciate it. But look, Nick, let's move on with our podcast. Let's move on to our non-scale victories, our hashtag NSVs. So, Nick, take us away. Who'd you find for our non-scale victories?
Well, hi, Bridie Lee. Bridie Lee, you've been doing a lot of good stuff on our group. So shout out to you today, Bridie Lee. Bridie said, forgot to do my Saturday picks, so quickly popped a bikini on this morning. So I love that already, because she's in the mindset of chucking her bikini on every Saturday. I can relate to that. Down 2 kilos since the start, feeling strong this week and seeing some more muscle tone. Up the steps to 12 to 15K a day, flexibility improving and kicking ass at karate too. Lots of wins. So that's pretty good.
Win. Awesome.
Yeah, triple win. And I love the fact that she's taking responsibility. She's going, okay, it's time now to up those steps. You know, as we enter the final few, you know, final month or so, that's when you do need to pick it up a little bit. So good on you, Bridie. Nice. Next one, D O'Hara says, oh, she says, Hara sounds like a pirate. And then she goes, ha ha. So that's your dad joke. Ha ha. Sorry for the non-impressed face, but I'm actually so happy that my pants need a belt now. Woo, NSV. Because she's obviously in the photo with pants that are too big. So that's a great non-scale victory. We probably call that a classic non-scale victory where your clothes are now not fitting you properly. It's a really good sign that something's happening with your body.
No, so good. I like that. Yeah, you have to get it. We should start a Max and a Maxine range or an M Challenge range of belts for individuals who need a belt. We were the first stop.
That's a really good idea. I love it. Yes, we could start an entire fashion line. We really should. Yeah. We should have lifting straps, really. But anyway, that's a conversation for a different day. Elise Davis, this is who's next. Elise says, wow, to say this week hasn't been a challenge would be an absolute understatement. Our little family has faced gastro and COVID all in one week. Oh, gosh, poor thing. Wednesday, I got back into and consistently met my goals for the rest of the week. Steps were at 10,000 to 10,500 from Wednesday to Sunday. Nutrition has been on point. I completed two training sessions this week and took the opportunity to give my body the rest it needed. So I love this. I love it because it's an excellent balance of chaos and control, which is what happens when these sorts of things happen within your family. It's like rather than going, I need to do it all, and I haven't done it all, so I'm disappointed. She's like, this is what I can do. This is what I have done. It's within reason. And Elise will find that nothing bad will have happened within her own challenge. You know, everything will still be on point. So well done.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And we are seeing, consistently challengers who are experiencing COVID-related challenges, let it be themselves catching COVID or maybe their kids or family members. Experiencing COVID. And it's great to see that individuals are still trying to be active, even if they are unwell, whatever their symptoms are. And, you know, focusing on things they can control, like, you know, eating good food, right? If you are unwell and sick, eating good food is probably good for you, right? And you're even getting your steps in where, you know, going maybe outside, getting some fresh air, going for a walk can be really beneficial for our health. And maybe, you know, strenuous, high intensity activity might not be the best thing to do if we are feeling sick and unwell. It's all about managing our load. And Elise looks like she's done that, giving herself a little bit of a break that she needed just so that she can overcome this illness here.
Yeah, I love it. Well done. Well done.
I found a couple this week, Nick. So the first one here goes to Fiona Austin. Fiona, how you doing? Fiona writes, deep into the challenge in 2022. Been a very long time since I looked the way I do at the moment. Proud of myself for committing and doing it on the daily, despite what I've been going on with work, kids, sport, and how busy my life is. 5 a.m. starts, tick. Nutrition, tick. Workouts, tick. Fitting into my clothes again after several years. Amazing what can be done in a short period of time. I love this, Fiona. You know, it sounds like you've got lots going on in your life, but you're making it all work, getting it done, and you know, you're reinvigorating yourself to what you were. It sounds like previously, you know, it's been a while since you looked this way, and you know, you should be very proud of that.
Yeah, Fiona, that's awesome. That's like the definition of non-scale victory. So, well done, Fiona. I'm so happy for you.
Next one here, found on Instagram and goes out to Rastus B. Camino 2022. And I found Rastus, and I think he's only got maybe 20 followers, but I love this. So if you're listening to this, go follow Rastus, R-A-S-T-U-S, B. Camino, C-A-M-I-N-O, 2022. And Rastus writes, it's amazing to think that 6 weeks has passed already. I feel so much better in so many ways than I did just a short time ago. Taking back control of my health and fitness with chronic injuries is difficult, but not impossible. Looking forward to the next 6 weeks and further improvement to see what can be achieved. Hashtag we are challenged. Love it, Rastus. We found you, buddy. Keep it up. Keep up the good work. And we're excited to see what you can do in the next 6 weeks.
I just followed you, Rastus. So look out.
Look out, Rastus.
You better put some more content up now because
we're watching you.
It's amazing. Good on you.
And last one here goes out to Alicia Morse. And Alicia writes, my sleep has improved so much over the past 7 weeks, and I truly believe it has helped me to lose weight, I've been struggling to lose. Not drinking alcohol has also been a huge impact on everything in my life, including sleep. And I think you really hit the nail on the head. That's the one, Alicia, where sleep, you know, is such a keystone for body transformation, keystone for fitness, keystone for our overall health, and keystone for our life. You know, if your sleep is, I would say poor quality, right? Because you can have good quality sleep with few hours, and you can have poor quality sleep with lots of hours. So if your sleep is of poor quality, regardless of how many hours you sleep, that can have a significant effect on your overall quality of life, your attempts at fitness, your attempts at body transformation, and your attempts at weight loss. So it's awesome that, Alicia, you're dialing in on your sleep quality. And I guarantee that the not drinking alcohol plays a big part of that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Both of those things are so key. And for the alcohol one, it's sort of like, why introduce a variable that is just, you know, not necessarily going to help you at all? It's not really got many positives. Why do that to yourself if you're really trying to improve your body composition? So well done, Alicia. I know you've been really trying to get on top of this for a while, so I can see that things are happening for you. How good.
So good, so good. Congratulations to all of our non-scale victory participants this week. If you are experiencing non-scale victory, let us know. You can write about it on our Facebook social hub. You can write about it on Instagram, like Rastus, or you can write about it in your journals on the Challenge website. We'll find it, and we may feature you in the Challenge Weekly show.
Well done.
Nick, let's move on to our Coach's Corner, where we offer our tip for the week. So, Nick, what advice do you have for us?
Okay, I have one just about spot reduction in fat, because people will often come to us as coaches, or, you know, in general, ask questions about how do I reduce body fat from a particular part of my body. And unfortunately, you can't really choose where it comes from, because otherwise we'd all be walking around looking exactly how we want to look all the time, wouldn't we? Because we'd say, all right, I'm going to take it from there and I'm going to put it there. And it's just not the way it works. So with that, this person says, I'm struggling so hard in losing my belly fat. I'm following the plan. I can see that there are changes, which I'm happy about. However, I can't seem to be able to drop my belly. Any advice? So my advice is to firstly, you know, just make sure that you are following everything. Now, I know that you would be and things like that, but if you're really passionate about, you know, getting lean enough to see definition or, you know, drop the fat in every area, you really need to do a big audit. So just make sure you're weighing and tracking your food, make sure you're getting your steps, make sure that you are getting your hydration, make sure you're getting that sleep, especially with belly fat, just because of the association also with if you are not sleeping enough, you kind of stuff your hormones up in terms of just hunger regulation. So you might not mean it, but you might be tired and snacking, having snacks, and then also just your stress hormone, which doesn't really want you to let go of your belly fat, because it doesn't know if you're being chased by a lion or not sleeping very well. So they're just a few little things to think about. But also, it is time, even though we're talking today about just do it, really with stuff like fat loss, it just takes time. And often when you think you're just about to give up, that's when things start to happen. But it's just going to take time, and it depends where you store your fat. You know, say for me, I don't tend to store it necessarily around the abs. So I will know other sections of myself. I know that I'm getting leaner if I see sort of more definition in my legs, things like that. So it's just understand that it's the same for everyone, every single one that is a natural athlete. It's just going to take time.
I agree that is a bit of a patience game. I think a big part of it where we can't ignore is, let's say, like genetical factors, like you just touched on at the very end, where individuals will have certain areas that our body likes to store body fat. You know, let's say the difference between male and female. So guys, traditionally, we hold body fat around our midsection, which is why you get that real stereotypical maybe truck driver look, where maybe they've got really skinny legs and really skinny arms, but they've got a nice big pot belly because that's where they've stored all their body fat. Whereas women more likely to store their body fat around their hips and thighs. So maybe similar to what you said, Nick, you notice that you've had a six pack for a really long time, but then you notice that you're getting lean when you see the definition in your legs. And that might be a similar thing. Maybe you've experienced this well, dear listener. So maybe you're a female and you've got that really hourglass shape. You've got a really lean midsection, but you're storing lots of that body fat around your hips and thighs. And that's a very genetic factor. And then, you know, there are other individuals that might be slightly different. Like let's say myself, I noticed that I do kind of lean down around my midsection kind of quick, but I hold a little bit of body fat around my thighs as well. So maybe I am a little bit more feminine, but you know, that's just my genetics and that's totally fine. It's totally cool as well. I will touch on the idea about belly fat. Sometimes it isn't necessarily belly fat. Sometimes it's, how to describe this, like maybe a bit of a postural thing where the way that we're holding ourselves, and then a bit of muscle tone thing as well. So, you know, within physique sports, let's say women's physique, they will focus on building their lats so that they create more of like an hourglass shape. Because if they have more of this back muscle that creates this like V shape, their waist looks thinner. So maybe for yourself, if you are experiencing, let's say, love handles or you know, some belly fat, you can change your shape by focusing on increasing the muscle tone. And you can quickly change the way your body looks by changing your posture. So, you know, if you had Coach Nick and I, we could probably augment our body position and posture so that we have a big belly and, you know, stick out, distend our stomach out. But then we can also very quickly change our posture so that we've got like a six pack or a lean belly, right? So the posture plays a big part in it. So maybe this individual, there's genetical factors that we need to consider, or genetic cool isn't a word, Stephen, genetic factors. Maybe there is some muscle tone factors that we can improve on. And then maybe there is some postural factors that we can improve on. But I do want to highlight that key point that Nick's saying is that we do want to audit what we're doing. And we do you know, need to be a little bit patient because it might have taken a long time to get to where we are. And it might take an equal amount of time to kind of get to where we want to go to.
Yeah. And then when you do lose it as well, then there'll be bit of loose skin. And don't forget also that, like, if you look around at a bodybuilding show, that's everywhere as well. So don't be too hard on yourself as well.
I agree. All right, Nick, I want to give a couple of tips about meal variety. Okay, meal variety. And to explain this, I want you to think about a real traditional bodybuilder bro, and think about what meals you would expect a bodybuilder bro to be having, right? And the real stereotypical meal is that, you know, chicken, broccoli, rice. Okay. And there's a reason why bodybuilders and physique athletes choose to have meals that are, I guess, what most of us would think of as like simplified meals, maybe like three ingredients, chicken, broccoli, rice, or, you know, protein, vegetable, and like, you know, an energy source. And that's essentially how we've designed the nutrition workbook and the nutrition templates, is that idea of like a source of protein, a source of energy, and a source of vegetables or fruit and vegetable or plant based food. So when we're talking about making a significant change in our body composition, so I'm not talking about, you know, like living a healthy lifestyle, I'm talking about what we're doing on the challenge here. We've got an intense focused, you know, 12 weeks of the challenge where we're trying to drastically manipulate our body composition, where we're trying to either build muscle or lose weight. We need to have like very strong grasp over the food that we're eating. And to do that, the most effective way to do that is to have the same meals over time, is to repeat the same meals over time. So talking about meal variety, often we face problems when we view meals as more of like an experience or like a recipe, right? And that is life. I understand that is the human experience, is being in that food culture. But you know, if we do want to make these significant changes in our body composition, we do need to transition the way that we view food from this food experience of maybe a recipe based approach to food, to this idea of like a bodybuilder, where we're like, okay, I'm looking at it as like a source of protein, a source of energy, and a source of vegetable or fruit and vegetable. And, you know, if you are more food orientated, you can turn that chicken broccoli rice into something, you know, more exciting, like maybe a chicken stir fry, right? You've got your chicken, you've got your vegetable, you've got some rice, put it in a fry pan, mix it up. Okay, now you've made the same meal, but you just kind of prepared it slightly differently. Okay. Now, when we are trying to have control over our energy intake, we need to be really clear about the foods that we're eating. If we are consistently having like different meals every single day, there is an inconsistency that comes with introduction of new foods to our diet. Okay. So one example is, let's say, labels on the food. Companies, when they make foods on the label, there are elements of errors that come onto that food label, and they legally don't need to be completely accurate. They can be off by, you know, 10%, right? And the small scheme of things, that can be quite small. But if you're consistently changing your meal every single time, you can't be 100% certain that you're having, you know, X amount of calories. You can't be certain that you're having 2000 calories, because all the changes that you're making down to like the actual label of food that you're having versus how you're preparing that certain food. Like if one night you're having, you know, a chicken-based dish, and another night you're having a pork-based dish, and then the next night you're going on to like tofu and all the other different things, you're changing lots of different variables. That adds in lots of different factors that can actually make micro changes to your energy consumption, which then can't be accountable in your energy intake. So what a more significant, effective approach is to have the same meal every day. And if you have the same meal every day, even if you are consistently wrong with that meal intake, where maybe you're having, you know, 10% more of what your goal is in terms of calorie intake, consistently being wrong with that meal intake has a consistency, because then you'd be like, all right, I'm having this, even though it's 2,100, I think it's 2,000, and I'm not losing weight. Okay, then I can move my food intake down. Okay, so the main takeaway that I want you to take away from this coach's corner is that simplified meals repeated consistently is more effective for significant body composition changes than chasing the food experience of multiple recipes or multiple food items, because those recipe approaches that we have add lots of variables to our food intake that can't be consistent from week to week. And even if that recipe had a calorie allocation, you can't be for certain that that allocation is correct. Even if it is on a database, the way you prepare that food is going to be different. And if you're having a different recipe or a different food every single day, that's going to add extra variables. Okay. Other things is that if you are having the same meal consistently, you get really good at creating that meal. You get really good at portioning out that meal. You get really good at understanding the satiety that comes from that meal. So if you constantly have, let's say, a chicken breast, okay, and maybe you have these small chicken breasts and you have two chicken breasts for dinner, okay, the behavioral process of having two chicken breasts will lead you to feel satisfied than if you were to have a recipe that you chopped up that chicken breast, but you had three chicken breasts, and that could lead to a different satiety level just because of the behavior associated to that. And furthermore, there is an effectiveness out of having more simplified and bland foods. So that's the reason why things like chicken broccoli rice works really well, because you don't overconsume that, right? Because it's not exciting. If you were to turn that chicken broccoli rice into, you know, this really delicious, you know, butter chicken curry that is just, you know, you could smell it from down the street and makes your mouth water. Okay, you bet that you're going to overconsume that. And that might be really great for a food culture, food lifestyle. But if you want to make significant changes to your body composition, it's probably best to stick with the more simple food options, simplify the process, repeat the same meals, so you get really good at having those same meals, rather than chasing a new meal for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Okay, so that was a big roundabout way to say meal variety. Think about how you're approaching your nutrition strategy. Are you repeating the same meals? That's kind of the structure that we'd like you to take away from the challenge, especially because we're trying to make big changes to our body composition. Or are you looking for a recipe book, which has its own challenges, especially if we want to make significant changes to our body composition?
Yeah, that's right. I think the culture of needing variety all the time is something that can really hinder progress. I think keep it simple.
Yeah, yeah. And I do want to emphasize that, you know, for lifestyle reasons, you know, food variety is awesome. You know, we like to have or like, you know, exciting dinners for like, you know, like that Friday night dinner or date night, those types of things. Awesome, great, happy days. But, you know, within the challenge, if we're trying to make, again, that idea of significant changes to body composition, get exotically lean, you know, be like a bodybuilder, there are some limitations in, you know, constantly changing our food intake and not having that consistent and controlled nutritional intake.
Yeah, definitely. And I also just think sometimes removing some of those things like the extra sauces, all those sorts of things can really help with what everybody always says, oh, I'm bloated, quote unquote. Just it really just removes that whole variable as well, I think.
No, I agree. And I do think that that's ultimately how we design our like nutrition template, nutrition workbook, where we would like you to repeat the same meals for, let's say, 4 weeks. And then we add a little bit of variety and change some of our meals up. We'd like you to look at food as like, you know, a serve of protein, cook the protein, serve energy, cook the energy, fruit and vegetable, cook the fruit and vegetable, put it together in like a bowl or a container. Then you've got your meal, right? You've got your chicken, broccoli, rice, or, you know, beef and sweet potato and, you know, something else. Like that's how we want you to visualize our food intake. If we are getting really extravagant with our nutritional intake and changing lots of things, and this is, I guess, the reason why we don't really emphasize lots of different recipes, is because it is not the most effective way to make significant changes to our body composition. Okay. So just some slight lens shifts about how we view food is the main takeaway today.
Yes, very good.
Nick, let's move on to our question and answers for the week. First question here is, how many steps is a stationary bike ride equivalent to? Pretty miffed that 30 to 40 minutes on a spin bike at about 140 beats per minute in my heart rate doesn't equate to any steps. So Nick, what advice do you have for this person? How many steps is a stationary bike equivalent to?
Oh, my friend. Well, I used to, way back, used to do maybe 7 of those classes a day, and I would not have any steps on this watch at the end of it. So there's a few things. Firstly, so steps, we don't really, it's funny because when you're first starting to step, or when it's something that you might not do, you think of it as this big daily exercise, you know, something that you do as a form of exercise. But really what we want you to do is get moving. The steps can happen in any way. It's just something that you need to do. If you want to add a stationary bike into it, but you are time poor, just say you are time poor and it's you know, something that you actually want to do, then you can either look at it like this. 10,000 steps takes an hour and a half. If you only have time to sit on a bike for 30 to 40 minutes, then you could maybe say that it's, if you want to make it an equivalent, say maybe like 4,000 steps, half an hour, but really it's a little bit different. It's going to be different for your body. I know that you say you're keeping it at about 140 beats per minute, your heart rate, but it can be quite fatiguing. So you're going to recover differently from that. So it's just a separate form of exercise. So you can't really chop and change. I would choose these days the walk over that, unless I was training for a cycling event, or if I wanted to do some high intensity intervals on there, and I'd be getting my heart rate higher than that, and then just hopping off that bike. So it doesn't really trade, but if you want to use it because you're time poor, then 30 to 40 minutes is probably about half of what you need to do out there in the field doing your steps.
Yeah, I like it. And I think just to reiterate that point where, you know, our step count is just a recommendation for our daily physical activity levels. It's not a, you know, a cardio elements, you know, it's not a way that we build our fitness. It's just a basic level of physical activity that we're suggesting that you do throughout the day. And most of us would reach our step goal just by doing life, you know, doing some chores around the house, maybe going to work, maybe going to the gym and walk around the gym, those types of things. That might be how we build up our step count. And you're right, Nick, there might not be a direct translation between the two. My advice is that if, you know, whatever logistical reason that you are choosing to use the stationary bike, maybe it's raining outside, maybe you can't walk outside, maybe you live in an apartment, whatever it is, cool, no dramas. It's about how we measure our physical activity levels. So maybe you are able to do like 5,000 steps on like a measured out, but then also another 30 minutes on a spin bike. So you may record that. All right, I've done 5,000 steps plus 30 minutes on the spin bike. Then the next day you might do 6,000 steps and 20 minutes on the spin bike, right? And just record those two separate numbers. And then it's probably best to average out those two separate numbers rather than trying to convert it into one number as your weekly average. So maybe by the end of the week, you've averaged, let's say, 5,500 steps on average for the week, and you've averaged about 40 minutes per day on the spin bike. Great. That's the number that we're kind of suggesting is your average. And then you can look at ways to either consistently meet that or try to beat that. And I think that's the big goal there. So it might not be worth converting it into one single number.
Yeah, the other thing is your body's going to get really quite efficient at spinning quite quickly, whereas with walking, it just doesn't really happen as much because, you're moving your whole body. There's different terrain, all sorts of stuff like that. So, I mean, before you know it, it'll be hard to even get your heart rate to 140. I'm not even against it. It used to be my entire business. Love spin, but, I just wouldn't be bartering it.
No, awesome. Next question here is, do you still consume as many protein shakes as the nutrition plan advises if you're not training daily? I feel like it's a lot of processed protein to be consumed when my body might not need it until I hit the gym later in the week. Okay, interesting question. So the first thing I'd say is that the daily protein goal that we're trying to aim for isn't necessarily like time dependent. Yeah, okay, there are some benefits with having protein close to our nutritional window in terms of like the most optimal muscle protein synthesis, sure. But you know, what is a bigger impact to muscle protein synthesis is just our daily protein intake. And if you are a training individual, regardless if you're training on a particular day, you're someone who exercises, you have built up levels of, I'm going to use the word trauma in your muscle, because let's say you train on a Monday, you know, come Wednesday, you're still kind of like healing from that. You've had some trauma in the muscle. Okay. So, you know, that protein target is still significant so that we can maximize how much muscle growth, because that muscle growth doesn't just happen the day that you exercise, it happens over the next subsequent days. Okay. So the target that we're trying to aim for is about 2 grams per kilo of body weight. That's the target. Regardless of what type of protein, let that be a protein shake or you're having it from animal products or plant foods, whatever it is, that's our protein target. Now, when we think about protein shakes, it's no different from food. It's really just dehydrated milk. And, you know, in the term processed protein, sure, you know, the milk has been processed because it's been dried out and we've got now a powder. Okay, it's technically a processed protein, but it's still a food product. You know, it's not anything magical or, you know, funky, right? It's just a food product. So if we choose to have protein powder, or we choose to drink milk, or we choose to, you know, have a steak or eat some tofu, it's still protein in our body. And, you know, if it comes down to training day or not training day, I would still recommend that you meet your protein targets for that day, so that you can not only maximize muscle protein synthesis, the creation of muscle proteins on that day, but then also recover from previous bouts of exercise and then to prepare for future bouts of exercise. Okay. Eat your protein, no matter what source it is. If you're training or not, it's probably good for you. And most of us following Western diets don't have enough protein, especially to fuel strength training. And, you know, we do need protein to build muscle.
Yeah, I love it. And it's funny because when you're kind of living it and breathing it and just do it all the time, you don't stop and think, oh, maybe I shouldn't have it today. And you know, that switch kind of flicks in you where it's just part of your daily consumption and that's that. But it can be confusing when you first start out and you're not sure. But good one.
The next question here is ideas on how to ramp up my metabolism. Mine has always been a slow burn, which is okay, but any suggestions would be great. So Nick, Any ideas on how to ramp up the metabolism?
All right. So, I guess I'm just going to ask, how do they know that? Is it because this person's had trouble losing body fat before? Because, in general, our metabolisms are pretty good. You know, I mean, they pretty much do what they're meant to do. You just have to find where you sit within what is a calorie deficit for you. And, sometimes it means that you need to ramp up your physical activity. But, a quick way to be able to burn more calories as a human being is to carry more muscle. So it's funny because you probably have to ultimately eat more to grow more to then be able to eat more and stay leaner. So that's my answer, but it's a long one. What I'd probably do go through a getting lean phase, so then you're quite receptive to putting on muscle, and then go through a growth phase. So that's long term. I certainly wouldn't be saying something like, you read on the internet, it's like, have some chili or something. Yeah, no. Obviously, that's going to make you sweat and things like that. But just in terms of your metabolism, how to ramp it up, how to make yourself need to burn more calories just to exist, it's you're going to have to grow some muscle.
Yeah, that's the only answer.
Right? Yeah, I know. I wish it's like, oh, we have a secret chili sauce.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not the way. I think Beyonce once had a maple syrup and chili drink that she said she had to lose body fat for her show or something. But it's like, yeah, you might have been training with a trainer and in a massive calorie deficit there, Beyonce. And also Beyonce has quite a bit of muscle already, but we're not talking about Beyonce.
I agree. Like when it comes to metabolism, metabolism means our energy expenditure, right? Energy expenditure. So the food that we consume, we digest it, and then where does that energy go? A really large portion goes into what's called the basal metabolic rate. So that is things like maintaining your skin, your hair, your heart pumping, your digestive system churning over, your immune system, your brain function. Then also includes like bone growth and maintenance, and then muscle growth and maintenance. That takes up a really large amount of our metabolism. I think it's about 70%. Next, we've got our NEAT, our non-exercise activity thermogenesis. That's about 15%. So that's, our normal physical activity, like, Coach Nick right now, she's moving her arm, fixing her hair, that type of thing. That's our NEAT. Then we've got what's called EAT, our exercise activity thermogenesis. That makes up about 10% of our metabolism. So that's you formally going to a gym, lifting some weights, doing some cardio, whatever it is. And then a very small amount, about 5%, goes to the thermogenic effect of food. So we know that protein has a higher thermogenic effect, meaning that it takes more energy to digest a protein molecule than it does to digest a carbohydrate or a fat. So that's why high protein diets are successful. It plays a small effect on our energy output, about 5% total. So how do we ramp up our metabolism? Well, increase your protein intake might increase your metabolism maybe by about 5%. Okay. If you are not going to a gym, going to the gym is going to increase your metabolism because you're going to expend more energy. If you are not doing any steps throughout the day, increasing your step count and your NEAT is going to increase your metabolism. But the biggest one, like Nick said, is affecting our basal metabolic rate, that really big, 70% one that makes up most of our body. If we were to gain more lean body mass, muscle is what we're referring to. You become heavier. So when you do steps, you're going to expend more energy. Like, if I'm cruising at over 100 kilos and Nick's what at like 60 or 70 kilos, I'm going to require more energy just to get up off a chair than it does for Nick. It's going to take more energy for me to walk 10,000 steps than it would be for Nick to walk 10,000 steps. So I then need to consume more food than Nick does just to maintain myself. So it's a win for me because I get to eat more food. And if we're both dieting, Nick and I will get to eat more food and diet while Nick, has similar foods to what her bunnies eat and would be struggling to diet. So that's where we really want to highlight that point of we want to build as much muscle as we can, maintain as much muscle as we can, because that's how we ramp up our metabolism.
True. And also, like, if you've been somebody who's chronically dieted forever, then that's where you might need to think of your body has probably just had enough of being in a calorie deficit and it's just learning to function on nothing. So you want to think about building some muscle and reversing it out, just doing something else.
No, I agree. Mm-hmm. Last question here, Nick. Why do people wear knee sleeves when squatting?
Yes.
Why do people wear knee sleeves when squatting? So I'll answer this one. I wear knee sleeves when I squat, mainly for just the squat motion, and mainly when I'm going heavier. So when I'm choosing to wear like a belt for my squat, I'm often wearing knee sleeves. Okay. What do they do? Well, they're quite compressive on my knees. They're really tight to put on. You can buy them in a whole range of different thickness from, you know, 4 millimeters, which are quite thin. So they're really great for, you know, maybe some CrossFitters or some Olympic lifters because they can get more mobility out of them. Or you can get them really thick up to, I think, about 11 millimeters. We're really, really thick and really low flexibility. The main aim with the knee sleeves is to provide an extension element to your knee. Because if you've got the knee sleeve on, and you bend your knee, the knee sleeve is working to try to straighten your knee. So it's a little bit of a quote, like cheat or assistance to help straighten your leg. So it's assisting the quadricep to strengthen, so straighten your leg, okay? Other things that come with wearing that knee sleeve is a perceived sense of stability. So it's not giving you any actual stability. Like, you know, a thin bit of cloth around your knee isn't making your knee more stable. You know, your knee is very stable. If you are walking, that's what, 7 to 9 times your body weight with each step you take. So your knees are very stable and a little bit of cloth isn't going to give you much stability, but the sense of stability is quite high. So you get this nice placebo effect that occurs. You've got this nice tight thing around your knee. So when you go to squat, you feel really stable and strong and it feels really nice. Then also keeps your knees nice and warm. So it helps with that fluid mobility around your knee. So if you are, you know, doing multiple sets of squats, in between sets, your knees stay nice and warm. So it can feel really nice. But the main takeaway is, why do people wear sleeves? It is to make them stronger when they squat. It can help to co-contract with the quadriceps, so you can create more force and basically help people be stronger. So if you are giving your quadriceps a bit of support, it does change the load more towards, let's say, the glutes. So when you are doing things like a squat, you can drive more load into the glutes to do the motion because your quads are getting a little bit of assistance. And that's very similar to what happens when people wear like those elbow sleeves. You might see people wear that when they bench press. So same thing, that's helping to straighten the arms so the triceps don't have to work as hard. So then the pec can do most of the load there. Okay. Similar to advice that I'd give about wearing a weightlifting belt, you don't want to be wearing knee sleeves for like every single activity. So you don't want to be wearing them on the leg press and the lunge and all the things. It's probably wise just to wear them for like, you know, a strength sport, maybe like powerlifting or something, focusing on that squat. And then once you've done the primary movement, when you move into your accessory work, you want to take those knee sleeves off because you want that quadricep to get some, you know, like stimulation, right? Because if you're wearing knee sleeves, you're trying to do some quad work, the knee sleeve is going to take a percentage of that load. We want most of that load to go into the quadricep to build up the quads, right? And let the knee function as it should be without the knee sleeve on. So don't let it become a crutch. And that advice also goes to other, you know, braces that some individuals might wear, you know, wrist braces, elbow braces. You know, it might be helpful in some exercises where they're a little bit maybe painful or you don't feel comfortable. But, you know, we do want to expose those tissues to, you know, a bit of load. And we want to stimulate some strength in those tissues as well. So the knee sleeves can be really helpful. It can also be a little bit of a crutch as well. More helpful in strength sports for like bodybuilding. Probably not as helpful because ultimately in bodybuilding, we want to try to find the way that we can stimulate as much muscle as we can. And if anything, we're trying to stimulate as much muscle as we can using the lowest loads that we possibly could to help manage, you know, fatigue, both, you know, of our nervous system, of our muscle, of our connective tissue and our joints. So in bodybuilding, you won't see many guys or girls wearing like knee sleeves because they're trying to build their quads using as little weight as they can. And there's no point putting knee sleeves on and then loading up 200 kilos on their back to do squats when they could take the knee sleeves off and maybe use 100 kilos and get the same results. Okay. So knee sleeves, they're cool. Might not be for everybody. That's cool as well.
Yeah, well, I just got some the first time, and
knee sleeve party.
I quite like them.
Yeah.
I did not know if it was my strength or the knee sleeves that made me do what I did. So I'll have to test without the knee sleeves next time and see.
Yeah. Well, I do find that that placebo effect is quite strong for me. Like when I put knee sleeves on and I, you know, go under like a heavy load, like, you know, two times my body weight, happy days, cool, fine. But if I'm not wearing knee sleeves and I've got maybe like my body weight on my back or something going to squat, like, you know, I kind of feel like, oh yeah, I don't feel as strong. So yeah, you know, that placebo effect can be quite high. So if you are wanting to rapidly increase your strength, go try some knee sleeves on and you might find that, oh geez, okay, maybe Coach Steve's got a little bit of help when he's squatting because he's got those sleeves on.
Yeah. And it's cool. It's cool to have help. Who cares? Love it.
No knee sleeves. So good. So good. But look, Nick, let's wrap it up there for episode number 57 of the Challenge Weekly Show. If you enjoyed this episode, check out our other 56 episodes. Yeah, we'll catch you next week for episode number 58.
See you, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. If you like the show, share it with a friend.
Or leave us a review on iTunes to spread the good word. See you next time.